show. It's gonna be awesome and dumb other stuff. Some other musical stuff.
This is Gunther and Band in the Afternoon on 1320 KFAN, Utah's sports leader.
Wasatch Golf Expo. Stop on by and see us today. We're going to be here until 7 o'clock. We're hanging out at the Southtown Expo Center.
Hope you're ready to grip it and rip it, man. We are ready, aim, firing it, if you know what I mean. There's golf lessons. There's golf tryouts. You can test some new equipment. You can check out your swing, have your swing worked on. There's all kinds of great opportunities, giveaways. We've got blender bottles here for you. Anybody that comes in here is going to get a free round of golf. And most certainly, if you come by our booth, you will get free unsolicited golf advice.
Also, looks like we have some of our patented 1320K fan blender bottles, courtesy of our friends at Blender Bottle. But a ton of great booths here, guys, with the latest equipment, the latest trips, clubs. If you're getting into the golf season, if you're getting that feeling as it starts to warm up a little bit, I know today's cold, but as it's been warm over the last couple of weeks, I know you can't wait to get out there and swing the sticks. Stop on by and see us today at the Wasatch Golf Expo at the Southtown Expo Center. Tickets are available at the door. Again, you can test all the new equipment once you get inside here. They've got great food if you want to bring the family down. Free lessons and clubs for the kids. All attendees get a free round of golf just by getting a ticket at the door. So stop on by and see us. We're going to be here until 7, and they're open until 5 tomorrow.
Now, Ben and I, like I said, will be handing out unsolicited golf advice.
No, stand wider apart. Much wider.
It's worth noting, I mean, you and I should go over our accreditation first before we just start whipping advice out all over the place. I won't speak for you, Ben, but my best score in the game of golf for 18 holes is somewhere in the high 90s with a lot of mulligans and a lot of cheating.
I very regularly shoot in the 70s on 9 holes.
Yeah, so you know, for 18, you're up there. You're in the triple digits there. You're nearing quad digits.
It's
nearly
just my handicap.
So, you know, you and I don't necessarily have the best advice, but it's not going to hinder us from handing it out. We're going to rearrange your grip. We're going to rearrange your stance. We're going to change the direction that you're looking. In fact, if you're trying to hit the ball north, hell, look south. Look backwards. Your eyes don't really matter. Think back to the Karate Kid. What did Mr. Miyagi teach you? If you're ever in a gym, just throw sand in somebody's eyes.
We're going to be here until 7 o'clock today at the Southtown Expo Center. It's the Wasatch Golf Expo. We'd love to have you stop on by and see us. If you can't make it down today, they open at 9 tomorrow. They close at 5 tomorrow. Food, fun, bring down the whole family. It's going to be a good time at the Wasatch Golf Expo. Coming up Monday, BYU kicks off their spring football. I can't believe it. Football's already back.
Yeah, spring football is sort of a test of how far you've come in the off season, how far you've recovered. Everybody's banged up after a long season, but then you have a few months to work out, and you gain a little bit of size, and you get some of those feelings back, and you start to miss football again. And that's why you see so many guys look so much different at the end of an off-season workout program and heading into spring ball. But the off-season program from January to March is the first quarter of the off-season. Spring football then is the second quarter. Your summer conditioning program is the third quarter. Fall camp becomes the fourth quarter of just the off-season.
Yeah.
There are so many different levels to actually getting a starting job, and it starts with spring football. You're going to have a few opportunities in the first 2 weeks. That means the first, five or six practices, really. A lot of these jobs are going to be decided, or at least the conversations are going to be had about these jobs. Now, BYU is a little bit different. They do have a little bit longer of a leash because a lot of these guys are coming off missions. 2 years of inactivity is a lot to ask then for somebody to just all of a sudden in 2 or 3 months turn around and be ready to rock in spring ball. So they let guys come along a little bit slower at times when it comes to some of these individual mission cases.
Don't be slow today. They were out there playing paintball, trying to have a bit of a team gathering event. Yeah, you don't want to be the slow guy. Don't trip out there on the paintball course, because I would imagine I mean, who's the dirtiest paintball player on the team right now at BYU? Well, somebody on the offensive line.
Yeah, offensive linemen are known for being dirty. I would hope it's Tijon Karoma.
Yeah.
Tijon Karoma is a really nasty player, a positive teammate, but just a really nasty player
out
there.
But man, does he blend into the scenery.
No,
he's a small little guy, so no. He likes to get out, hide in the woods, and he will take you down.
Tijon's a petite center. He's about 6 foot tall, just a wispy 285. Yeah. I mean, if he turns sideways, you can't even see that dude. You know, he looks like a churro standing up. I mean, he's so thin.
He hides behind trees. You can't find
him. Oh, my goodness. Now, I would imagine Tijon Karoma was purposely trying to hit guys around the mask. Were you ever a paintballer when you were younger?
I've paintballed one time. Only once in my life, and it was at
did
a haunted house we did a couple of years. Yeah, we were shooting zombies.
Oh, that was the first time ever?
Yeah, we were. Aim for the face, aim for the groin.
Well, that's the number one piece of advice. Obviously,
that's what they tell you when you put your mask on.
Yeah, you spoke to somebody with a great deal of intelligence with all combat sports, really. That's the strategy you need to take.
That's what apes do when they attack you.
Well, exactly. Primates do this, attack the face, then attack the groin. The pelvic area is always going to be the most sensitive soft tissue on any one of your targets. Now, when I was a youngster, my brother and I used to love to paintball. A couple of his friends had paintball guns. Of course, I never had friends, so I couldn't ever ask any of my friends to show up. But we would go out to the orchards behind our house and shoot each other for hours. I one time gave myself a pelvic injury, and I'm not going to go into graphic detail, but I was hit directly in the most sensitive area. It went in betwixt my pelvis, so to speak, and I got a paintball down there, and I hit the ground thinking I would never ever be able to have a family. Now, obviously, I have two children.
Wrong.
So, yeah, thanks a lot, Obamacare, back then, trying to tell me to just saw a leg off left and right. The point is, though, at the end of that, I got so upset at my brother for shooting me in betwixt my pelvics that I went up close range, and I shot him in the neck with the paintball gun. It severely bruised his larynx.
We're going to have a huge show for you today. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, David Nixon, former BYU linebacker, is going to join us. Talking about what spring football is like at BYU, what he'd like to see now from the second year or from Kalani Sitake in his second season. Ben Golliver is going to join us from Sports Illustrated coming up an hour from right now, getting a breakdown on the second half of the NBA season. And then we're going to be talking some Jazz basketball after the trade deadline with Aaron Falk coming up at 5:25. So really, an absolutely enormous show for you today.
And on a personal note here, we are very close to the concession stand, and I am absolutely going to throw down on one of those donuts over there. I am going to go nuts on one of those donuts. It looks like there's a limited supply, so help me if anyone here over the next 10 minutes cuts in line and gets that donut, I'm going to eat your hand.
Other than no injuries, which is always best-case scenario from spring football, and it happens. You always see guys break a foot, tear up a knee, unfortunately, hurt an ankle, and they end up missing half of the season or all of the season. Other than that, what's the best-case scenario for BYU coming out of spring football? What's the number one overall goal?
The number one overall goal is to find more speed and playmaking ability at wide receiver. And I think BYU's coaches will tell you that if that happens during the course of spring ball, it's been a successful spring session in and of itself. There's a bunch of newcomers that are going to show up in the fall, transfers, and guys that will be eligible that can and will affect the depth chart. But BYU might not just be reliant on five or six total wide receivers. I think the tight ends are going to continue to grow and grow inside this offense as now Ty Detmer can take over for an offense under Robert and I that wasn't as reliant on the tight end. And maybe part of that wasn't Robert and I. Maybe part of that was Taysom Hill. Maybe it was a combination of the two. But I think you're going to see the role of the tight end continue to grow for BYU. I think that's part of the reason why they went out and signed three or four tight ends this year. I don't think any of them are going to be ready to go this year,
right?
But BYU's clearly building for the future.
Well, why would you move Moroni Lualu-Puchutau to tight end unless you were really focusing on that being a strength of your team, because he was one of your better wide receivers last year and certainly one of the more talented big bodies coming back that you can target for Tanner Mangum. Now, you do have some bodies coming back. Jonah Trinneman's going to be the speedster, and you saw it a little bit last year. I think you'd like to see that develop a little bit more. But actually, we expect so many of these JUCO kids to come in and be able to play right away. When you talk to coaches, they're very familiar with the idea that, yeah, well, they're better than a true freshman coming in. It does usually take about a year for them to get up to speed before they become full-time contributors. You saw it with David Luafatasanga, or Kavika, I should say, at the University of Utah at linebacker. His first 10 games. he was pretty much a non-factor. He had a couple of plays against Washington where he looked good, but it really wasn't until about the bowl game where you saw him coming out and start to feel comfortable in his own skin, start to replicate some of the plays you would see on film. I would imagine you start to see that more from Jonah Trinneman coming up again this next season for BYU.
Think about how different you were at 20 years old versus 18 years old. And so, yeah, there are benefits and drawbacks to junior college products, but I think the wide receiving core and that tight end core is going to be the main focus this spring for BYU.
Let's welcome in our next guest. You can find him on Twitter at D_Nixon, former BYU and NFL linebacker, always a BYU legend. It is David Nixon. David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, David.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, man, we were just talking about this huge paintball fight that the BYU football team got in. They did some team-building exercises. Did you guys ever get to play paintball when you were playing at BYU?
You know, I don't think we ever did paintball, but we had some team-building stuff. We got out and about, did some fun stuff. We rafted the river, did some stuff here and there, but paintball's taken it to a whole other level. I'm a little jealous.
David, does that help? I mean, does that really bring the team closer together to get you ready for what is the grind of spring football?
Listen, I think any time you can get the entire team out there together to do any event, whatever it is, I think it's positive. I mean, you got the bus ride out there, you got the actual activity itself, and then bus ride back, guys are joking around. I mean, anything to build that team camaraderie, I think, is positive. So, you know, the college athlete is tough because you are so busy. Life is hectic. I mean, you've got school that you're worried about. A lot of these guys have wives and families that that's pulling, you know, their time away from things. So anytime you can get away from those distractions and, you know, be together as a team, I think it's positive, and especially when you're kind of trying to head into a important time for this football team, which is spring ball. I mean, this is with Kalani's now got a full year ahead of him. You know, this is a crucial time for these players to really be keyed in and honed in and make sure the whole team's on the same page.
David, what's the difference, look, before we get into some of the nitty-gritty stuff, of being, you know, a first-year player and this is your first appearance at BYU, what's that feel like that first day versus when you were a senior, when you're an upperclassman and you know what to expect?
It's just night and day. I mean, because these first-year kids, and even kids that were around just last year, these underclassmen, I would say, I mean, you're still fighting for your position. That's really what spring ball is all about. For the veteran guys, the upperclassmen, I mean, they've already proven themselves. Spring ball is kind of, I mean, half of them sit out of spring ball. It's not really that necessary. They're still trying to get healed up from the prior season. But for those younger guys, I mean, this is for their time to shine and hopefully leave a good taste in the coach's mouth moving forward into the summer and then heading into fall ball. So if I'm a young guy, I mean, this is my time. And they'll have plenty of opportunities. That's what spring ball is all about. The veteran guys usually sit it out, and the younger guys got to come in and improve themselves. So this is one of those times where you can't put on cruise control. You've got to be on edge and ready to go.
Tanner Mangum didn't have a full off season coming off his mission, and then last year obviously he was sitting behind Taysom Hill. What can a full off season of workouts do for a guy in Tanner Mangum and his development?
I think it's huge. I mean, Tanner got a lot of mental reps in last year sitting behind Taysom. He was in all those meetings. He understood the offense. He was right there with Ty. But this is a year when he really gets to take spring ball. He's the guy. He's the leader. He's the captain, and really lead this offense along. And so I think spring ball is big for him. You know, we talk about the veteran guys usually sit this stuff out, but for a guy like Tanner Mangum, you know, this is going to be probably his most crucial spring ball that he's ever had because he's in this offense that he'll have for the next few years. And, you know, once again, this is where he gets those main reps and as the number one quarterback. And, you know, last year he got those reps in as well, spring ball, but yeah, keep in mind, it's still in the back of everyone's mind that Taysom will be coming back and maybe join the team. And so, you know, this is now his team, and he's at the helm. And so there's no doubt this is a huge, huge spring ball for him.
David Nixon's our guest, 1320K fan. David, when you look at the offensive side of the ball, we were talking about Tanner. He's an answer. I mean, that's a nice plus going into spring football. But it seems like there's quite a few question marks at the skill positions outside of him. Where are you most focusing in on spring football for BYU to find some answers?
Yeah, I think it all goes back to that running back position. You know, with Jamal Williams vacating that spot, who's going to step up? And that's the one spot that just glares out to me. You know, you look at last year when Jamal was hurt, you had guys like KJ Hall and Algie Brown. You had guys that come in and fill in. But the question is, who's going to be the feature back? And, you know, with the pro style offense, it's more crucial than ever. You have to have a feature back, that can run the ball, that can set up the pass, right? I mean, that's what the pro-style offense is all focused around. So, you know, BYU's got some athletes in those positions. It's just who's going to emerge and be the leader. And that's what I'm most interested about, who can fill the void of Jamal, because Jamal wasn't just a leader on the field. But he was that vocal leader in the locker room and off the field for those guys. And so who's going to fill that void, that hype void, you know, the guy that gets the rest of the team up and going like Jamal did. And that'll be the most interesting thing that plays out for me. And that's not going to be solved here in spring ball. I mean, that's something that I think even more importantly come summertime will be something that a player will emerge as the guy that's sitting around there helping coordinate the offseason workouts, helping coordinate 7-on-7. And so there will be a guy that will emerge, and I'm interested to see exactly who it is. And it could even be an underclassman. You know, we know Kalani, he'll play anybody. He plays the best athlete out there, and it could be an underclassman that comes in and proves himself and gains respect of his teammates. And next thing you know, you've got one of those guys stepping in and filling that void. So very interested to see what happens there at the running back position.
Most teams now in college football are running a spread offense. They're going up-tempo style. How can BYU use their pro-style offense more so to their advantage?
You know, you look at the recruiting class that Kalani went out and got, and he focused very heavily on defensive and offensive linemen. And that's what, you know, with the pro-style offense, that's what you have to focus in on. You've got to have a sure foundation. And he went out and got big, strong, athletic guys that can move. You know, in the past, BYU's gone with these bigger offensive linemen, and to go fast, go hard with Coach and I. They went for some faster guys that could get out and block downfield. But Kalani's going for these big, tall athletes on the offensive defense side of the ball. And so, with that being said, it all starts up front with his offensive line. It'll be interesting to see how that all comes together. And then the pro-style offense. I mean, this is Ty's offense. This is his mastermind. And, you know, I think there was a learning curve this year for Ty and for that offense of trying to figure things out, trying to figure out where their strengths were, where their weaknesses were. And I think for anybody, it's going to be nice to have 1 year underneath his belt would be Ty Detmer. And now knowing his personnel and continue to be able to recruit the guys that he wants in the system. And so I think that's where the spring ball and this pro style offense comes into play. It is definitely different than the spread. You know, I talked to Taysom a lot this past year, and it took him a little while to get used to the pro style. And we saw as the season kind of transitioned on, they kind of reverted back to the shotgun spread offense a little more. Because those were the strengths of this offense. But I think Ty continues to implement that offense, obviously here in spring ball in the summer and going to fall ball, to where you'll see his offense continue to transition a little bit to more of what he wants it to look like long term.
There's a 6'5", 340-pound stud muffin offensive lineman down in St. George who's going to be the state of Utah's top recruit next year. Do you like that BYU's going down to St. George to do some spring ball? I mean, I'm sure it's not a coincidence that Penei Sewell's down there. I mean, do you like this strategy of BYU going right to some of these prospects?
You know, we see that with Michigan going out and do their spring ball and getting trips in. You know, it's a new concept. I'm not sure how I feel about it. You know, personally, like I said, there's so much going on here, you know, at your respective university with schooling and with family, whatever it may be. You know, for to go off and do a satellite type camp for a little bit, it's a new concept. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It'll be interesting to see how the players react to it. If it's something they like, it might be good to, you know, you look back at the old day in fall ball, teams would, you know, and even when I played in the NFL, we'd go off to Napa when I was with the Raiders and when I was with the Panthers. We went down to Spartanburg, and it is kind of nice because you do get away from the distractions and you have to rely on being around one another. And so, you know, maybe it could be for the good. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but, you know, anytime you can be around recruits and give them some exposure, let them come to practice a couple times a week and be around the players and let those players kind of befriend those potential recruits. I mean, that's only positive exposure for the teams. And so, yeah, I mean, hey, listen, St. George is great weather as well, so you can't complain about that.
Find him on Twitter at D_Nixon, former BYU and NFL linebacker. Great stuff, David. Thanks.
Thanks, David.
Okay, guys. Yep, take care.
There he is, David Nixon, giving us a great breakdown on BYU as spring football starts coming up this Monday. We are hanging out live at the Wasatch Golf Expo. We're going to be here until 7 o'clock tonight, but stop by and see them tomorrow. If you can't make it in tonight, they open from 9 to 5, and all attendees, if you get tickets at the door, you also get a free round of golf, free lessons and clubs for the kids, drawings for trips, clubs, apparel, everything you want in your golf game. They've got it here at the Wasatch Golf Expo.
You can test out some of this new equipment. Great vibe for the kids. There's all kinds of giveaways. We've still got some blender bottles here. Ben and I are not going to run out of unsolicited golf advice either. We're going to tell you to change your grip whether you need it or not.
Use a bigger ball.
Yeah, I mean, probably try a heavier ball as well, maybe a very dense one. In fact, get a tennis ball, very wet.
and start practicing with that one.
We're here at the Southtown Expo Center. Be here until 7 o'clock tonight.
If your propane tank runs out, the best price on propane around is at Wasatch Propane. So go by and say hi today, 201 West and 2700 South in Salt Lake City for your vehicle or for your barbecue. They'll even recertify your propane tank at Wasatch Propane.
Wins for both BYU and Utah on the hardwood last night. We'll break them down in the Wasatch Whip Around. Coming up next, it's Gunther and Ben.
On 1320K Fan.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon.
Gunther and Ben, 1320K Fan. We're live at the Southtown Expo Center. It's the Wasatch Golf Expo going on tonight till 7 o'clock. It's just how long we will also be here. So if you stop by, say hi, check out all the great apparel, the clubs, the different trips that they're giving away while we're down here. They've even got an indoor driving range. Tickets are available at the door, and for everyone who gets a ticket, you also get a free round of golf. No reason not to come on down. Check out some golfing at the Wasatch Golf Expo.
You can sample a bunch of incredible new products. You can try all the new top technology. You mentioned the golf lessons. They're going to give you a free round of golf. But most importantly, I was able to make it over to the concession stand and get one of those delicious donuts. There is a short supply. I did not yet.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry about it.
What kind did you get?
It's a sprinkly one and a good one.
Chocolate or pink?
Always vanilla, and I went for some pink sprinkles.
Okay.
So I've got that going for me now. We've got a bunch of opportunities here. The driving range is open right next to us. Ben and I are always willing to challenge you for pink slips for long drives.
That guy hooked it.
Did you see a hook there? No, he was definitely. It's because he's opening his club face up. See that? That's a thing, man. Now, Ben and I are not going to give you great advice, but we are going to give you unsolicited advice here. Open the stance. And then really at the end, more like a line dance maneuver. Yeah. Bring your stance back in. It's important that your feet never be equidistant. Always up and back, sort of like an offensive tackle stance.
Bring both heels up constantly throughout your swing.
Well, your heels should never touch the ground at any given point.
Alternate.
No, and really keep the elbows bent, just like you're dancing or if you're trying in a mosh pit trying to defend yourself.
But you can get actual great advice down here at the Wasatch Golf Expo. Again, we're going to be here until 7 o'clock tonight, or come check them out tomorrow at 9 to 5 at the Southtown Expo Center. Coming up here in the Wasatch Whip Around, both BYU and Utah get wins on the basketball floor last night. We'll talk about that, including a weird suspension for the youth. We'll have to try and get to the bottom of that because it will hurt them when they make it to the Pac-12 tournament if they don't get this player back. We'll tell you who it is coming up here in just a couple of minutes.
Well, speaking of the hardwood, there was also some interesting details out. Now, when you think about the totality of what's happened to Deron Williams since he's left the Jazz. Now, he left the Jazz because he and Jerry Sloan were butting heads. I'm sure he feels differently now after working for coaches that were not as consistent as Jerry Sloan. I'm sure Deron Williams has a little more appreciation for what Jerry Sloan was giving to him before.
Yeah.
But still, you know, cooler heads couldn't prevail. These two teams had to move on from each other. Deron was most likely going to leave anyways a year and a half from then. Well, since then, Deron Williams has been paid almost $30 million by teams to go away. Brooklyn paid him $27
million. $27 million.
Dallas just paid him $2.5 million to walk away. Now, the easy response is, I wish somebody paid me $30 million not to work. But obviously, it's not that simple. I mean, these are horrid decisions by NBA teams that are having to admit mistakes and say, rather than continue on, we could lose $50 million in revenue if we keep paying this guy $27 million over whatever that was. I think it must have been 2 years left on his deal in Brooklyn. Well, Deron Williams has been paid $30 million to not play. Did Michael Jordan earn more than $40 million total in his career?
Not through the first, 15 of his 17 years. I don't think he probably made $30 million. He had a couple of huge seasons at the end there. But, yeah, I mean, that's how much money Deron has been paid to not play for your basketball team. I pulled up an article here from 2015. I mean, it feels like his time in Brooklyn was so long ago because it's been such a disaster. But going back, it says, yeah, he was bought out. He had two seasons remaining on his contract where he was owed about $43 million. So I get why Brooklyn did this. They ended up saving $10 million or so, but they still paid him $27.5 million to go away. And now Dallas did the same thing, $30 million. I mean, it's essentially hush money. You know, it's go-away money. It's stop bothering us. I don't think he's necessarily on bad terms with Dallas, but Dallas doesn't want to play him because they want to lose games and get their draft stock improved before the end of the year.
He's on bad terms in Brooklyn.
He's on terrible terms in Brooklyn. I think that was one of the reasons why maybe the Jazz wouldn't put a bid on him right now while he's trying to clear waivers, because they don't want to reunite him with Joe Johnson, who Joe Johnson was one of the stars of that Brooklyn team that Darren was a part of.
Darren doesn't have to come back with the Jazz, but something tells me over the next two or three seasons, you know, he's going to be a value for the Jazz. You know, I don't think he's going to demand some huge salary anymore. Clearly, his skills have diminished. But, you know, he's a father. He's now a grown man. I bet he feels bad in some ways. And this isn't a personal sport. It's very much a business sport. I understand that, but I wouldn't be shocked if D-Will decided to come back to Utah over the next couple of years. Yeah. But, yeah, the Jazz clearly felt like this team they had as presently constituted was good enough to make that playoff run. I expected them to move on from maybe Shelvin Mack. I expected the Jazz to hear more from Derek Favors, but then you start to think about the power forward market. It's completely saturated right now.
Exactly right. And I think one of the reasons why the Jazz didn't find a deal with Shelvin Mack was because the Cavs realized, hey, we're going to be able to sign Deron Williams on our own terms. That's going to work out. And it also sounds like, and this is something I thought would happen yesterday, and it looks like it's going to, Andrew Bogut's probably going to sign with the Cleveland Cavaliers as well. He's got experience against
Golden State Warriors
okay. as well. So you're going to get a couple of big guys. It's going to be a cool opportunity.
No, it's not our – hey, don't look at us, man. Hey, no, it's the driving range. Look, somebody's golf ball just went quite awry as a ball bounced past us here at the Golf Expo.
I didn't even see it.
Some bros at the concession stand thought we were hucking golf balls at them. No, man, I'm telling you. No, this aggression will not stand, man. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
Let's get to the Wasatch Whip Around.
Gunther and Ben are taking you inside the headlines with the opinion makers and news breakers on the biggest stories in sports. This is the Wasatch Whip Around.
Wasatch Whip Around is brought to you by Tosh, your orthopedic specialty hospital, Utah's premier sports medicine and orthopedic center, providing comprehensive care for your entire family. You can give Tosh a call today, 801-314-4100. First up on the Wasatch Whip Around, you can find him on Twitter at MSaltisRivals. You can read him at UteNation.com, part of the Rivals Network for the University of Utah. It is Mikey Saltis. Mikey, the Utes get a nice win last night, but a weird suspension before the game with Devin Daniels. Do we have any idea how long we should expect the kind of phenom freshman to be out?
Hi, guys. How's it going? Concerning Devin Daniels, Larry Krystoliak, his press release saying that actions detrimental to the team was the reason for his suspension. I don't really know the timetable, but I know it wasn't anything illegal. That's what my source has been telling me. It's mostly just, team action, and I guess, you know, nothing illegal happened, and just, you know, he needed to, you know, come to terms with, you know, his role on the team a little bit. I guess that's that was the reason for the suspension.
It sounds like Devin Daniels had been late to a meeting before, and it maybe had some tardiness
Correct.
Issues. Any idea on how Utah is going to step up and try to replace Devin Daniels in the short term?
Yeah, in the short term, look at Gabe Beeler. I mean, he's come on really well. I mean, he's always been a shooter. He was brought onto the team for his shot, and you can see it. He's shooting well over 40% in the last couple games that he's been playing a little bit more frequently. The thing concerning Gabe Beeler is just his defense. That's why he hasn't really seen the court too much. But it seems like he's getting a little bit better grasp on Coach K's defense, defensive schemes right now. So I expect him to fill into that 2-3 spot moving forward.
You can find him on Twitter at MSaltisRivals. Read him at UteNation.com. Great stuff, Mikey. Thanks.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Mikey Saltis. Next up on the Wasatch Whip Around, you can find him on Twitter at Mitch_Harper. He's our BYU insider. Read him at 1320kfan.com and CougarNation.com. It is Mitch Harper. Mitch, how about the offensive explosion from Elijah Bryant last night? BYU has been waiting for somebody outside of the LP3 to kind of break through, and you finally saw it. Some optimism now with Elijah Bryant going forward, being able to be that guy?
Yeah, that's a huge breakout performance for Elijah Bryant, who, by all accounts, this season has been kind of missing. They expected a lot of they had a lot of expectations for Elijah Bryant going into the year, being the transfer from Elon, but injuries have kind of derailed the progression they thought, the production that he was going to bring to the team this season. So, yeah, that was a big moment for him. Does that change the narrative of BYU basketball this year? I don't think so. It's still kind of a disappointing year. They got a big opportunity on Saturday against number one Gonzaga, but still good for BYU to get a dominating win on the road, which is something they haven't done at all this season.
Well, speaking of optimism, where would you say BYU football is most optimistic heading into spring ball next week?
Most optimistic? That's a good question, Gunther. I would say probably on the defensive side of the ball. Defensively, I think this BYU defense might be the best defense BYU's had since being an independent. I think in terms of depth, personnel-wise, this defense really could be something special for BYU in 2017. And they've had some good defenses. You go back to 2012, they had the third overall scoring defense in the country. So I think this group defensively has a lot of potential, a lot of great talent. So I think that's where BYU's feeling confident. They're going to try and address some concerns maybe with the wide receiver spot, also some depth at running back. But defensively, BYU's feeling pretty confident going into Monday.
Find him on Twitter at Mitch_Harper. Read him at 1320kfan.com. Great stuff, Mitch. Thanks.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Mitch Harper, our BYU insider. The Wasatch Whip Around brought to you by Tosh, your orthopedic specialty hospital. For more information about sports and orthopedic injuries, follow the experts at Tosh on Facebook or Twitter today at Tosh Utah. Huge game, obviously, for BYU tomorrow. Gonzaga's better than BYU is, and I'm not sure this is a game that BYU has a great shot at winning. But I think they've got a real opportunity to keep this game close, and I think if BYU can do that, that's enough of a win late in the season. Colorado's a bad basketball team, but Utah really needed that win after they've suffered just some atrocious losses the last couple of weeks, especially on the road, losing to Stanford, losing to Oregon State. They really needed this game last night against Colorado, even without Devin Daniels. They're going to have to figure out a way to get him back if they want to have any hope of making a splash in the Pac-12 tournament.
Well, Devin Daniels played more minutes than any other youth this year. He's a true freshman. He played in, I think it was, 26 of the 27
yep.
games. I mean, he was incredibly consistent at times. Now, he's already had a public issue where he was late to a meeting, and far be it for a grown adult to tell a freshman in college that he shouldn't be late. That's not the point of this. It's just these are minor details that you don't think about when you're a star freshman. You've got the world at your fingertips. You're thinking about basketball. You're thinking about the academic side. I'm sure you've got quite an active social life. And then, yeah, you think, oh, I'm 30 seconds late to this meeting. So what? Well, the details matter. And I assume, because this is not some legal issue, this could be something silly like maybe Devin Daniels missed a class.
Sure.
It's a freshman mistake.
Right.
My goodness. Go back to your freshman year in college. Think about all the dopey things you did. But Devin Daniels has got a big frame and clearly he's got a potential NBA future.
Coming up next, the Pac-12 blog at ESPN released their list of trap games for the University of Utah coming up in 2017. We'll tell you what they said. Stay tuned. It's Gunther and Ben.
On 1320K Fan.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon.
Gunther and Ben, 1320K Fan, 343. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. A very happy Friday to you. And we're hanging out at the Southtown Expo Center. It's the Wasatch Golf Expo going on until 7 tonight. We're stopping by and see him tomorrow, 9 to 5.
Yeah, we've got lessons for kids. We've got all the latest golf technology. If you guys want to try the driving range, it's a ton of fun. Get on down here to the Southtown Expo Center today until 7 or tomorrow until 5, as you mentioned. Ben and I still have some blender bottles to give out. There's a ton of fun. The whole family's going to love it. There's been a bunch of kids running around here. They got their swag bag. They're filling it up. The kids are enjoying themselves. Let me ask you something, Ben. Personally, how much do you enjoy getting your hair cut?
Oh, I do it occasionally.
Because I absolutely hate it. The one thing missing would be a sensual massage here. And thank goodness, Utah's Senate is currently debating a bill right now that would allow a barber to give a, quote, gentle, brief massage at the end of every haircut.
Well, it's something they do. They'll put a hot towel on the face, or they'll give you a back rub real quick, a neck massage to make sure you really enjoy the...
Being pampered. And the language is being debated right now to make sure that we can get some specific areas that can be pampered, because that's what lawmakers really should be doing, is deciding where another adult can touch you. And so I really...
Especially in a barber
shop. Yeah, when I go to a barber shop, I want to know that my gubernatorial leaders are over there making sure that my neck and back are protected. Now, I'm for a full wax and massage experience, and I'm talking about the entire shebang-a-bang. I mean toes, back.
From North America to Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, to Australia. I mean, all the continents, Ben. Asia, Europe. You know, just like you're saying. So the point is here, I haven't had my hair cut in many months, and I look like a slovenly idiot. Now, if I got a neck massage at the end of it, I mean, heck yeah, sign me up. I'm going to get my bangs trimmed.
Aren't they trying to ban it? Aren't they trying to ban the fact that you can get a massage now?
Oh, I hope. I mean, I really hope so.
That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make sure you can't do that anymore.
Oh, okay. So actually, now that I think about it, I'm actually very against this. I don't want anyone touching me on my neck when I'm getting my hair cut.
My wife's a hairstylist. She works in a salon. Can she not do it to me either? I mean, I'm her husband.
Well, now, wait a minute. I mean, did you clear it with your governor?
I don't
because
pay her.
If you don't have a note from your governor, well, then no, your wife can't touch your neck.
Someone called Jason Chaffetz. I'm getting a neck massage from my wife.
Whoa.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Call the neighborhood. The wife feels like squaring off the back of my neck here.
That's my wife.
Well, how do you feel about this, Ben? If your wife's a hairstylist, would you be upset if all of a sudden she's spending 3/4 of her time rubbing shoulders instead of cutting hair?
It's all about the cash, man.
5-minute haircut, 45-minute calf massage. My goodness.
Coming up in football at 50, trap games for the University of Utah in their 2017 college football season. The Jazz back in action tonight, going up against the Milwaukee Bucks. Jazz don't make any moves at the trade deadline, so they're going to rely on this team getting healthier to make a run in the second half of the season. Then again, if I'm the Jazz, and look, I don't want to face San Antonio in the first round, because I think that would probably be a quick series. But I also don't want to face the Clippers in the first round, and they're probably going to be in that 4-5 matchup. I might not want to face Memphis either, because they're just going to beat the hell out of you. That's what they do every time the Jazz play them. And the Jazz have had some success against Memphis and can slow it out and play that grind-it-down style. But I'm not necessarily aiming for any one team in the first round, maybe outside of the Houston Rockets, though last night they looked absolutely brilliant against the New Orleans Pelicans in Boogie Cousins' debut. It might not matter if you're the 4 seed or the 7 seed in this upcoming series. The Jazz odds of advancing might be about the same.
Well, so does that change the overall outlook on the season then? If the Jazz don't get out of the first round, could this potentially be looked upon as a successful season? Or is the season success contingent upon getting to the second round or the conference finals?
Look, I thought last year the goal for the Jazz was to make the playoffs. And the reason you make the playoffs is not just to say you made it, but it's to get that experience of playing those 7 games. And when the Jazz were not spending money at the trade deadline, not making bigger moves to bring in talent, not spending money before the season started and relying on lesser proven point guards, and obviously it came back to bite them, I thought the Jazz were saying, you know what, this experience we're getting is going to be just as good as making the playoffs. Because why else would you, I don't want to say be negligent, but why else would you not spend that money to get yourself there? So this year, when you have added veterans like Joe Johnson and George Hill, you have Gordon Hayward in the final year of his contract, you have Rudy Gobert inked to a new $100 million deal, why would you not have put yourself in a situation to be competitive in the playoffs? You're not just trying to get there to say you got there. You want to get there and show that you can actually do some damage and then know exactly what you have to do this offseason to take that next step.
Well, and the next step includes Gordon Hayward, of course, for the Jazz, at least if you ask the Jazz. But Gordon Hayward is going to have a serious offer from at least the Boston Celtics this offseason. Boston is going to get beyond the first round. Boston might be a conference finals team. Now, I don't think Boston's better than Cleveland. I'm not picking against LeBron for the next 5 to 10 seasons. So if I'm Gordon Hayward, you know, I've got to seriously look in the mirror and ask myself what the real goal is, because, you know, to pick up and move the family to Boston, you got a couple of kids now, you got to do a whole lot of different life-changing activities to do that. To move to Boston for what, an extra 2 weeks of basketball? What is that, 3 or 4 playoff checks, which is a drop in the bucket for a guy who's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars like Gordon Hayward? Look, it's worth it for Gordon to do whatever he feels is best for his career. But to uproot yourself after you've built something here with the Jazz, to do all that to get out of the first round, I mean, it seems somewhat fleeting. And I'm obviously talking about extremes here. If the Jazz don't make it out of the first round, if Boston's, barely a fringe contender in the East, which I think most of these teams are, Gordon Hayward is in the tougher side of the bracket right now, so to speak, as Oklahoma City and Golden State and San Antonio. And there's so much talent in Golden State still with the Clippers. You've got a difficult run here in this conference, in this side of the bracket, but Gordon Hayward's not going to have a necessarily easier run on that side either. He's got to make this personal choice. What's going to satisfy him? I think he's leaning more and more towards just signing with the Jazz, finalizing his entire career here, spending a decade or so in the same spot, and building his legacy that way.
And that's not to say this season was valueless for the Jazz. I think the Jazz figured out some very important things. They figured out that George Hill is a guy that's probably worth investing in long term. That's a point guard you want to put some money into. Sign him to a 3-year or a 4-year deal. And if you do that, even 2 years down the line, if you're paying him $20 million, I'm guessing that's a contract you would be able to move if you had to clear room for Dante Exum if he's able to elevate his game to be a starting point guard in the NBA. And the last 2 weeks before the All-Star break, I think were pretty encouraging. That's going to be interesting to watch the second half of the season. How does Dante play? And can the Jazz figure out if Derek Favors is going to be healthy enough to invest in long-term or whether or not they need to move him to find a better fit in the front court? That's what the Jazz are going to be working on.
I'm not sure the market value is ever going to go up for Derek Favors again. Same with Alec Burks. And these are decisions that you have to make based on the value of their contract for the Jazz. Yeah, they're fairly low value contracts, but as the salary cap is going to continue to rise, those contracts are going to become more and more valuable to other teams, and so that's a card the Jazz can play. But this season is about convincing Gordon Hayward to stick around. There's somewhat of a nuclear option if Gordon Hayward leaves. There's a lot of plans that have to be thrown out. There's going to be a lot of questions that have to be answered.
So if Gordon Hayward leaves on July 1st because he's an unrestricted free agent, he doesn't have to clear a protective period where the Jazz can match a contract. If he signs with Boston, and there's a 10-day period still where it doesn't become official, but if he signs there by July 2nd, July 3rd, George Hill's already signed, probably with the San Antonio Spurs in that situation. The Jazz are looking to trade a guy in Joe Johnson to get value from him in the final year of his contract. Yeah, it would be a nuclear, almost scorched-earth option for the Jazz outside of Rodney Hood, Dante Exum, Trey Lyles, and Rudy Gobert, plus the two guys they would have just drafted. We'll talk more about the Jazz coming up here in about 20 minutes with Ben Golliver from Sports Illustrated. Right now it's time for Football at 50.
1320 KFAN brings you Football at 50. BYU, Utah, the National Football League. Every hour at 10 till the hour, it's Football at 50 on 1320 KFAN.
Football at 50 is brought to you by Jolly and Jolly, the father's rights attorneys. Let Jolly and Jolly be your voice in a system that's twisted the very notion of equal justice for all. Jolly and Jolly, 801 Fathers. It's Jolly and Jolly, 801 Fathers. Trap games for the University of Utah. Their must-win game, according to ESPN, they do both must-win and trap games. Must-win game coming up against UCLA on November 3rd. UCLA is – Utah's got to steal one of the L.A. games next year, and I don't think you're going to beat USC. I think they're going to be a top-10 team throughout the season. They'll suffer a loss here or there, but I think it's going to be hard to get them out of those single-digit rankings all season, meaning UCLA's a much more important game for the Utes to win, and they get them here this year, but over the last, what is it, 3-4 seasons now, they've alternated wins on each other's home field.
UCLA is going to be a hot mess of a program. Utah's offense dismantled that defense last year. I agree that's a must-win game based on the growth Utah's program should have. But Utah might not necessarily take a step forward from a win-loss standpoint in 2017. The program's headed in the right direction, but there's a lot missing from that offense. So Utah's not going to just be penciled in for a 9 or a 10-win season.
Right.
But I agree with ESPN. They say the trap game is that Arizona game in late September. Arizona's a bad matchup for Utah. That was not an easy game this year by any means, and Arizona was a horrible team this year. Arizona's style of offense is just a tough matchup for Utah's defense. Utah doesn't have the speed on the edges, whereas that's what Arizona's trying to do, trying to get to the edge, to get their speed out in space. Utah wants to maul you straight ahead. Arizona tries to get to the edges, so it's always going to be a tough matchup, but Arizona's not going to be a great team next year. They're not going to be able to throw the ball, and so there's not going to be some mighty spike in their play.
Arizona is a team that even this year Utah struggled in the first half with. Now, a lot of it was self-imposed. What, 10 false starts? Something ridiculous in the first half of that game, but Utah ended up coming back and getting the victory there.
Oh, that was the just bleeping fire me game.
Yeah.
That was where Jim Harding was having a convo with Kyle Whittingham, and Kyle Whittingham was getting after him about he wanted the snap count to be changed up because Arizona was clearly they'd been made aware of the timing of the snap count, and Jim Harding felt like it wasn't necessary at that point in the game, and they had a screaming match, and they were seen on camera yelling at each other, and Jim Harding said, well, then bleeping fire me.
I think the advantage for Utah in that Arizona game is it is the season opener, I should say the Pac-12 opener, so the Utes are going to be geared up to go on the road and get a win there. They've got not a tough non-conference schedule, don't get me wrong, but playing BYU was a very emotional game that the Utes are going to have to get up for. Must win becomes tricky for Utah next year, because what's a must for Utah next year? I would tell you it's make a bowl game. That's what Utah must do. They can't drop back on their seasons when they're rebuilding, when they lose their entire offensive line, they lose their entire secondary. They can't drop back to a point where they're winning five games again like they did a few seasons ago. They need to stay competitive. They need to represent the Pac-12 in a bowl game, and I think they will do that by taking care of the Arizona teams.
Well, I think the must-win games are always going to be against Oregon State, Washington State, Arizona, schools with low athletic budgets. These are schools that have different recruiting styles. I mean, Arizona's got great weather. That's all they have to mention to land recruits. But Washington State has no athletic budget. Oregon State's in the middle of nowhere with no athletic budget. We all love Gary. He's a great coach, but he's trying to make something out of very little right now. That's why it was so amazing that Mike Riley wasn't appreciated for 15 years there in Corvallis. But Utah can't be losing games to those teams regardless of the schematic differences or lack thereof. You just need to out-recruit Pullman, Washington, Corvallis, Oregon, Tucson, Arizona for the Arizona program. Utah just needs to be offering a better city.
Here's the games I think Utah needs to win next year in conference. I think they need to win all three of their non-conference games, including going on the road at BYU, and that's a tough task. BYU's going to be really good next year.
That's going to be the best rivalry game in many years. BYU's going to have a very good offense next year. I think their defense is going to be improved.
Here's the conference games, and what I would say is a must-win. At Arizona is a must-win. I don't think playing Stanford at home is a must-win, though Stanford should be a little bit down next year. They're still going to have a quarterback trying to come back from an injury in Keller Christ. At USC is a loss. Arizona at home is a must-win. At Oregon, I'm never going to call that a must-win for Utah. Home against UCLA, you would like it to get to 8 or 9 games.
But Oregon's replacing so much. If Utah can't take advantage of Oregon next year without a quarterback, with a new coach who's been fumbling every single issue in coaching hire so far, Utah should be able to take advantage of the Ducks next year.
Utah needs to beat Washington State at home next season. It's a bad matchup offensively. We've seen Utah not play well against some of these bad matchups, but you need to be able to beat a team in Washington State when they come at your place. I'm not expecting you to go on the road and beat Washington the following week, but then the next week after, when Colorado comes into town, you have to beat Colorado when they roll into Salt Lake City. You can't lose to them on back-to-back seasons.
Colorado had their first sellout in 8 years this season in 2016, playing against Utah at home. Utah's basketball program just beat up on Colorado last night, and I think it was Kyle Kuzma, or I forget who said it, but they said, we just don't lose to Colorado.
Yeah.
I don't think the team had lost at that point in Boulder. Colorado's a good football program, but again, when we compare athletic revenue and budgets, I mean, they're not spending what Utah's spending. They're not trying to be as good of a program in that sense.
And support. I mean, the support from the fan base, donors, is going to be much higher in Utah.
Colorado's a tough team in some areas. In other areas, they're not. I think a lot of what you saw last year was some senior leadership. There's 8 starters gone now off this Colorado defense. I think Colorado will be bowl eligible next season. But don't forget how recently Colorado was a two-win football team. I'm sorry. They were a one-win team in 2012. In 2014, they doubled that up. They got to 2 wins.
Good question from Mountain Ute on Twitter. It says, Michael Richardson, the incoming offensive lineman for Utah, one of the top recruits Utah got here in the state. He says he's only got him weighing at 235. I think Rivals had him at 260. How much weight does he have to gain? And what are the lineman rules to weigh at the University of Utah?
Well, the rules are you need to be at least 285 pounds. Because even if you have perfect technique, if you're amazingly strong and you got a low center of gravity, you really are going to get tossed around if you're any lighter than 285. Michael Richardson's not ready to play this year.
He redshirts this year.
Whether he's 235 or 260, it's just too big of a jump for him. But what it is a good sign that Utah's building up their offensive tackle core. Offensive tackle is the hardest position to recruit because everybody plays tackle in high school. But then you got to find guys based on their shape and their power who can shift over to guard. And then the hardest part about finding a center is finding somebody who's physically good-looking enough to play that position. Hey, Michael Richardson might end up at center.
He looked like a handsome guy.
Handsome guy. Now, again, at 240 pounds, 250 pounds, he's nowhere ready to play this year. But, you know, he was, I think, a top 10 recruit in state.
Yeah.
Utah needs to be able to land a guy like that. He's not the top recruit in every class, but if he's a guy that starts 4 to 6 games a year over a 3-year span as a backup or a starter, you know, filling in, that's at the very least what you want out of a local guy who can show up and help the program.
We're live at the Wasatch Golf Expo at the Southtown Expo Center. Stop by and see us. We're going to be here until 7 o'clock tonight, and they're open tomorrow from 9 to 5. Tickets available at the door, and for every ticket you purchase, every attendee gets a free round of golf. So make sure you can see us at the Southtown Expo Center. Coming up next, we'll talk about the second half of the NBA season with Ben Golliver from Sports Illustrated. Stay tuned. It's Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.